This is the University of Cambridge Local Examination Syndicate International General Certificate of Secondary Education, June 2000 examination in English as a Second Language. Paper 4, Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, center number, and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher, now. The tape will not be stopped while you're doing the test. The tape should now be stopped and the papers handed out. Now you're all ready, here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. Anna rings her local college to find out about courses. What does Anna want to study?
Hello. Please, could you send me details of your study programs?
Certainly. Tell me which course you're interested in and I'll send you our prospectus.
Engineering. Hello. Please, could you send me details of your study programs?
Certainly. Tell me which course you're interested in and I'll send you our prospectus.
Engineering.
Question 2. Simon is telephoning his local bookshop to order a book. What is its order number?
Hello, King's Bookshop. How can I help you?
I'd like to order a book. It's called Jane Eyre.
I'll just look it up. Yes, we can get it for you. It's £5.99, and its order number is 187-653.
Thank you.
Hello, King's Bookshop. How can I help you?
I'd like to order a book. It's called Jane Eyre.
I'll just look it up. Yes, we can get it for you. It's £5.99, and its order number is 187-653.
Thank you.
Question 3. Andrea is arranging for a friend to come to visit her. When is he unable to stay?
When can you come and stay with us?
I can come from the 11th to the 18th of this month, or the 22nd to the 29th, but I can't be with you between the 19th and 21st, as my uncle is visiting me then.
When can you come and stay with us?
I can come from the 11th to the 18th of this month, or the 22nd to the 29th, but I can't be with you between the 19th and 21st, as my uncle is visiting me then.
Question 4. You are planning an afternoon journey in 2 days' time. What will the weather be like for your journey? Give two aspects.
The weather forecast for the day after tomorrow. Sunny spells in the morning, but a risk of afternoon showers. A moderate west to southwest wind all day. Maximum temperatures will be 15 degrees Celsius in the morning, rising to 20 degrees in the afternoon. The weather forecast for the day after tomorrow. Sunny spells in the morning, but a risk of afternoon showers. A moderate west to southwest wind all day. Maximum temperatures will be 15 degrees Celsius in the morning, rising to 20 degrees in the afternoon.
Question 5. Luke has seen an advertisement for a fireworks evening, advertised in his local paper, and is phoning for further details. From where can he buy tickets?
Hello. Could you give me details of the fireworks evening advertised in the paper, please?
Certainly. It's this Wednesday, 7:30 until midnight, at the Town Sailing Club. Admission is by advance ticket only, price £5, available from the venue.
Hello. Could you give me details of the fireworks evening advertised in the paper, please?
Certainly. It's this Wednesday, 7:30 until midnight, at the Town Sailing Club. Admission is by advance ticket only, price £5, available from the venue.
Question 6. You play table tennis at a local club. When do your club activities resume?
Listen, everyone. Next week is bank holiday, but the week after that we will be having our club session as usual. Listen, everyone. Next week is bank holiday, but the week after that we will be having our club session as usual.
That is the last question in part one. In a moment, you will hear part two. Now look at the questions for part two, exercise one.
Part 2. Exercise 1. Question 7. Listen to the following radio interview with Peter James on Worldwide Sea Life Centers, then complete the notes. You will hear the interview twice.
And this evening, we are welcoming Dr. Peter James to our program. Peter is going to tell us about the sea life centers, which are springing up in all corners of the earth. If there is a sea life center near you, listen out for the special entrance offer at the end of the report. Peter, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, and thank you for inviting me to talk about our sea life centers. We can show you and teach you all about such sea animals as sharks, octopuses, rays, jellyfish, and seahorses, to name but a few.
What fascinates you about underwater life, Peter?
Well, we know that oceans cover most of our planet, but they are still as mysterious to us as outer space. Did you know that under the waters lie mountains higher than Everest and trenches deeper than the Grand Canyon?
No, I had no idea. So how does sea life present all of this to the public?
Sea creatures can be even more beautiful and fearsome than those found on land. So, sea life centres use displays and technology to bring visitors closer than ever imagined to underwater life.
Hmm. What specific attractions do the centres have on offer?
Well, among our displays, for example, is the Tropical Reef Adventure, which features a colourful assortment of remarkable corals and fish.
Okay. And what about sharks?
Yes, we have a shark academy, a guide to their mysterious lifestyle. Did you know that sharks have been around for more than 350 million years, even before dinosaurs?
Really? And what about the octopus?
Of course. We've got a display called World of the Octopus, where you can find out all about them. Did you know?
Probably not.
The octopus has blue blood, three hearts, a beak, and communicates by changing skin colour.
Can we discover all of this without getting wet?
Oh, yes. But we do have hands-on rock pools, where the inquisitive visitors can pick up and touch many species of sea creature, all under expert guidance.
Excellent. And if we go along to a sea life centre before the end of the month, a child enters free with each paying adult. Is that so?
Absolutely. I hope to see you soon at a sea life centre.
Now you will hear the interview again.
And this evening we are welcoming Dr. Peter James to our programme. Peter is going to tell us about the sea life centres which are springing up in all corners of the earth. If there is a sea life centre near you, listen out for the special entrance offer at the end of the report. Peter, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. And thank you for inviting me to talk about our sea life centres. We can show you and teach you all about such sea animals as sharks, octopuses, rays, jellyfish, and seahorses, to name but a few.
What fascinates you about underwater life, Peter?
Well, we know that oceans cover most of our planet, but they are still as mysterious to us as outer space. Did you know that under the waters lie mountains higher than Everest, and trenches deeper than the Grand Canyon?
No, I had no idea. So how does sea life present all of this to the public?
Sea creatures can be even more beautiful and fearsome than those found on land. So, sea life centres use displays and technology to bring visitors closer than ever imagined to underwater life.
What specific attractions do the centres have on offer?
Well, among our displays, for example, is the Tropical Reef Adventure, which features a colourful assortment of remarkable corals and fish.
Okay. And what about sharks?
Yes, we have a shark academy, a guide to their mysterious lifestyle. Did you know that sharks have been around for more than 350 million years, even before dinosaurs?
Really? And what about the octopus?
Of course. We've got a display called World of the Octopus, where you can find out all about them. Did you know?
Probably not.
The octopus has blue blood, three hearts, a beak, and communicates by changing skin colour.
Can we discover all of this without getting wet?
Oh, yes. But we do have hands-on rock pools, where the inquisitive visitors can pick up and touch many species of sea creature, all under expert guidance.
Excellent. And if we go along to a sea life centre before the end of the month, a child enters free with each paying adult. Is that so?
Absolutely. I hope to see you soon at a sea life centre.
That is the end of exercise one. In a moment, you will hear exercise two. Now look at the questions for exercise two.
Part 2. Exercise 2. Question 8. Listen to this broadcast about forest fires around the world, then complete the report. You will hear the broadcast twice.
Hello, and welcome to our special report on forest fires around the world. When flames broke out in Florida's forests in May 1998, no one was prepared for the devastation that lay ahead. 2,000 blazes were reported in 66 of Florida's 67 counties. This was the worst outbreak of fires there for 65 years. Steve Parson, a United States Forest Service official and eyewitness, reports for us.
The fires were sparked off when lightning struck Florida's massive pine forests. Fueled by strong winds, record temperatures of over 37 degrees Celsius, and thick undergrowth, the fires raged out of control. It was just unbelievable. We had 73 new fires start in one day. 5,000 firefighters flew in from all over the states to help battle against the flames.
That was Steve Parson reporting from Florida. One of the largest forest blazes was in Cape Canaveral. 400 firefighters tackled the fire there. We have another eyewitness report from Jim Brenner, a local firefighter.
Everything was being eaten up by flames. It was like a bomb going off in your backyard. Bulldozers piled up soil barriers, and land was burned deliberately to contain the fire. Planes and helicopters poured down thousands of liters of water, but there was no rain in sight, and the blazes just got worse.
Thank you, Jim Brenner. Well, the rain did not come until 6 weeks later. By then, 70,000 people had been evacuated and didn't know if they had a home to return to. The monetary cost of fighting the fires and repairing the damage was over $500 million, but the cost to the environment was much greater. We now have conservationist Karen Young on the line.
Yes, roughly 2,000 square kilometers of land were wiped out by fire. A lot of volunteers rescued wildlife and pets, but the animals couldn't move as fast as the flames. Masses of deer, cattle, goats, and sheep were killed. Dogs and rattlesnakes were also on the casualty list.
Thank you, Karen. Worldwide, 25,549 forest fires were reported in 1998. The worst fire ravaged Indonesian rainforests for over a month. 20,000 square kilometers of forest land went up in smoke. Unusual weather, for example, changes in wind, hot temperatures, and lightning can start the flames. Usually, however, people are responsible for most of the fires. Some industries illegally burn huge areas of forest to make way for farmland and building work. Loggers cut down trees and leave behind wood chips, which make excellent fuel for flames. And, of course, picnickers drop cigarettes or fuel from barbecues, which start fires.
Now you will hear the broadcast again.
Hello, and welcome to our special report on forest fires around the world. When flames broke out in Florida's forests in May 1998, no one was prepared for the devastation that lay ahead. 2,000 blazes were reported in 66 of Florida's 67 counties. This was the worst outbreak of fires there for 65 years. Steve Parson, a United States Forest Service official and eyewitness, reports for us.
The fires were sparked off when lightning struck Florida's massive pine forests. Fueled by strong winds, record temperatures of over 37 degrees Celsius and thick undergrowth, the fires raged out of control. It was just unbelievable. We had 73 new fires start in one day. 5,000 firefighters flew in from all over the states to help battle against the flames.
That was Steve Parson reporting from Florida. One of the largest forest blazes was in Cape Canaveral. 400 firefighters tackled the fire there. We have another eyewitness report from Jim Brenner, a local firefighter.
Everything was being eaten up by flames. It was like a bomb going off in your backyard. Bulldozers piled up soil barriers, and land was burned deliberately to contain the fire. Planes and helicopters poured down thousands of liters of water, but there was no rain in sight, and the blazes just got worse.
Thank you, Jim Brenner. Well, the rain did not come until 6 weeks later. By then, 70,000 people had been evacuated and didn't know if they had a home to return to. The monetary cost of fighting the fires and repairing the damage was over $500 million. But the cost to the environment was much greater. We now have conservationist Karen Young on the line.
Yes, roughly 2,000 square kilometers of land were wiped out by fire. A lot of volunteers rescued wildlife and pets, but the animals couldn't move as fast as the flames. Masses of deer, cattle, goats, and sheep were killed. Dogs and rattlesnakes were also on the casualty list.
Thank you, Karen. Worldwide, 25,549 forest fires were reported in 1998. The worst fire ravaged Indonesian rainforests for over a month. 20,000 square kilometers of forest land went up in smoke. Unusual weather, for example, changes in wind, hot temperatures and lightning can start the flames. Usually, however, people are responsible for most of the fires. Some industries illegally burn huge areas of forest to make way for farmland and building work. Loggers cut down trees and leave behind wood chips, which make excellent fuel for flames. And, of course, picnickers drop cigarettes or fuel from barbecues, which start fires.
That is the end of part two. There will be a short break before you hear part three. Part three is on side two of the cassette.
In a moment, you will hear part three. Now look at the questions for part three, exercise one. Part 3. Exercise 1. Question 9. Listen to the following radio interview with a postman in the countryside. Then answer the questions below. You will hear the interview twice.
Today we're going to hear about the life of a countryside postman. Norman Dunbar, welcome to the studio. Tell me, are countryside communities on your postal round changing?
Not really, no. There are no real communities, just remote farmhouses where the same families have been for generations. They are miles from anywhere, and there are no shops or near neighbours. I've got to know just about everyone, and I speak to them most days.
Mm. Do you feel that you've become part of their lives?
Well, after a few years, yes, I begin to. You know when they are ill, when they are well, when old ones have died, and when babies are due.
Would you be happy for someone to swap post routes with you?
Put it this way, I'd fight to keep my route, but every few years a more senior person arrives, and he or she has the choice of the best job. So far, they haven't wanted to take my job. It wouldn't suit everyone.
You sound as though you look forward to going to work.
Oh, yes, I do enjoy seeing these people. I've a little school on my postal round. I think it must be the smallest in the region, with just 12 children in it. Mm-hmm. They all know me. In such isolated places, people always have time to talk. You can find you're running late if you've been having a chat, but it doesn't matter to me.
Can you briefly describe your day's routine?
The sorting office is only a short distance from my house. I start sorting mail at 0500 hours, and I'll be doing this for an hour. You get the mail for your own round and sort it before starting off. The van is parked outside the office. I finish delivering the mail at 1100 hours, and then set off for home. I'm back in the town by lunchtime.
And do you deliver the mail when it snows heavily?
I get as far as I can. I often follow the snow plough, but I've once been stuck in thick snow until late afternoon, before a farmer pulled me out. I always carry waterproofs, a thick coat, and a spade just in case. You don't need a lot of snow to stop the van on steep bits. If it looks as if it's an important letter, I'll walk there.
Do postmen in the countryside get remembered well at Christmas time?
Oh, very. I'm given everything from money to chocolates, puddings and turkeys. Most people give me something. They don't so much in towns because they don't really know their postman as they do out in the countryside.
Imagine you won a large amount of money in a competition. Would it change your life?
I've sometimes wondered what I'd do in a situation like that. But I love this job, and I can't see myself giving it up.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Today we're going to hear about the life of a countryside postman. Norman Dunbar, welcome to the studio. Tell me, are countryside communities on your postal round changing?
Not really, no. There are no real communities, just remote farmhouses where the same families have been for generations. They are miles from anywhere, and there are no shops or near neighbours. I've got to know just about everyone, and I speak to them most days.
Mm. Do you feel that you've become part of their lives?
Well, after a few years, yes, I begin to. You know when they are ill, when they are well, when old ones have died, and when babies are due.
Would you be happy for someone to swap post routes with you?
Put it this way. I'd fight to keep my route, but every few years a more senior person arrives and he or she has the choice of the best job. So far, they haven't wanted to take my job. It wouldn't suit everyone.
You sound as though you look forward to going to work.
Oh, yes, I do enjoy seeing these people. I've a little school on my postal round. I think it must be the smallest in the region, with just 12 children in it. Hmm? They all know me. In such isolated places, people always have time to talk. You can find you're running late if you've been having a chat, but it doesn't matter to me.
Can you briefly describe your day's routine?
The sorting office is only a short distance from my house. I start sorting mail at 0500 hours, and I'll be doing this for an hour. You get the mail for your own round and sort it before starting off. The van is parked outside the office. I finish delivering the mail at 1100 hours and then set off for home. I'm back in the town by lunchtime.
And do you deliver the mail when it snows heavily?
I get as far as I can. I often follow the snow plough, but I've once been stuck in thick snow until late afternoon before a farmer pulled me out. I always carry waterproofs, a thick coat, and a spade, just in case. You don't need a lot of snow to stop the van on steep bits. If it looks as if it's an important letter, I'll walk there.
Do postmen in the countryside get remembered well at Christmas time?
Oh, very. I'm given everything from money to chocolates, puddings and turkeys. Most people give me something. They don't so much in towns, because they don't really know their postman as they do out in the countryside.
Imagine you won a large amount of money in a competition. Would it change your life?
I've sometimes wondered what I'd do in a situation like that. But I love this job, and I can't see myself giving it up.
That is the end of Exercise 1.
In a moment, you will hear Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for Exercise 2.
Part 3. Exercise 2. Question 10. Listen to the following radio interview about improving your memory. Then answer the questions below. You will hear the interview twice.
Do you find yourself forgetting the simplest things, like the name of someone you've only just met, or where you put a certain book? If so,
Here are some ways of improving your memory. We'd like to welcome Jane Bidder to our program tonight to tell us more about this. Jane, good evening.
Good evening. Yes, did you know that it is thought that after the age of 17, everyone's brain begins to shrink?
Oh, dear. There's not much hope for any of us.
But there is. With training, we can actually improve our memories as we get older. If we keep our brains active, we will increase our brain power.
Does this work for all of us, men and women alike?
Yes, but women naturally retain their memories for longer than men. Male mental agility decreases from age 20 onwards. In women, it is much later.
Can we do brain exercises, then?
Yes, crosswords or playing chess. Regular exercise increases the blood circulation to the brain, helping us to think and remember more clearly. Iron in our diet also helps as our blood carries oxygen to the brain. There are also ways of self-help in improving our memories.
Tell us about them, then.
Firstly, making your memory more visual. If you need to find where you have put your bicycle after you have been shopping, for example, when you lock your bike up, visualize or make a mind picture of where it is, for example, its surroundings. Is it by a postbox or a shop?
Good advice. What else?
Try writing everything down. You could have a notice board on the wall of your room. Use different colored pens for different areas of your life. For example, red could refer to college, homework to do, meetings to remember. And blue could refer to your leisure time, meet for swimming, play table tennis Thursday at 2 o'clock. The physical act of writing something down will help you to remember something even if you lose the list.
Thank you. Any other suggestions?
Yes, be methodical. Always put your wallet or your keys in the same place as soon as you get home. Then there's no problem in remembering where you put them.
Unless someone moves them.
Also, when you are studying, limit yourself. The most effective times are the first 10 minutes of every session. Study for an hour, then take a break before starting again.
Jane, you've given us all some very helpful advice. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Do you find yourself forgetting the simplest things, like the name of someone you've only just met, or where you put a certain book? If so, here are some ways of improving your memory. We'd like to welcome Jane Bidder to our program tonight to tell us more about this. Jane, good evening.
Good evening. Yes, did you know that it is thought that after the age of 17, everyone's brain begins to shrink?
Oh, dear. There's not much hope for any of us.
But there is. With training, we can actually improve our memories as we get older. If we keep our brains active, we will increase our brain power.
Does this work for all of us, men and women alike?
Yes, but women naturally retain their memories for longer than men. Male mental agility decreases from age 20 onwards. In women, it is much later.
Can we do brain exercises, then?
Yes, crosswords or playing chess. Regular exercise increases the blood circulation to the brain, helping us to think and remember more clearly. Iron in our diet also helps as our blood carries oxygen to the brain. There are also ways of self-help in improving our memories.
Tell us about them, then.
Firstly, making your memory more visual. If you need to find where you have put your bicycle after you have been shopping, for example, when you lock your bike up, visualize or make a mind picture of where it is, for example, its surroundings. Is it by a postbox or a shop?
Good advice. What else?
Try writing everything down. You could have a notice board on the wall of your room. Use different colored pens for different areas of your life. For example, red could refer to college, homework to do, meetings to remember. And blue could refer to your leisure time, meet for swimming, play table tennis Thursday at 2 o'clock. The physical act of writing something down will help you to remember something, even if you lose the list.
Thank you. Any other suggestions?
Yes, be methodical. Always put your wallet or your keys in the same place as soon as you get home. Then there's no problem in remembering where you put them.
Unless someone moves them.
Also, when you are studying, limit yourself. The most effective times are the first 10 minutes of every session. Study for an hour, then take a break before starting again.
Jane, you've given us all some very helpful advice. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That is the end of part 3 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the tape and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, candidate number, and center number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, the tape should now be stopped and all the papers collected.